So now this is the open line. Any questions, Michael?
Well, so what are we supposed to do today?
I don't know.
What you had in mind?
Hold on, we just had a drop out here. Sorry, we had just had a. You're still on track trip?
Right.
Okay, here we are back on.
Are you back? Okay.
Yeah.
So what should we do?
Well, it's about, you know, it's more like if there are questions about your, you know, the way how you approach your whole thing. I mean, maybe I would be interested in hearing when you started with the whole telematics stuff and what you've been doing so far, because you are also teaching this together with Mark, right?
I started doing that last year. Yeah, we taught one course last year between our campuses. Mark and I are about 1 hour apart driving.
I see.
80 miles.
Okay.
San Diego and
40 kilometers. So we're on different campuses, but
yeah,
we're in the same university system. It's just different campuses. So we taught a course last year. I started, I mean, it doesn't seem like very long for me. I don't know, 2007,
mm-hmm.
So maybe 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like yesterday. I mean, you know,
yeah,
when you get older, these things feel like very short amounts of time. So I feel like we're still just learning, and it's great to have the classes and do things like this today and teach courses, because we're still trying to figure this out, and it helps to have students involved, because we just get more discussion going. Every time we do a new project or a class or anything, we learn a lot. So it's a very, you know, it's a very fascinating field, but I don't think there's any experts right now. Everybody is a learner. So that's one thing to keep in mind, is that we're all trying to figure out this new medium together. I mean, there are people who are expert in specific areas.
Yeah.
Particularly with technology, some people are very expert in networking. And then you have some great musicians and people who do different things, or video. But it's a very, very much a community project every time, because you really need to collaborate when you do this work. You have to work with a lot of people with different skill sets. And so that's been very interesting for me. Because as an improviser, as a composer who works with improvised music, I'm used to collaboration, you know, with groups. And so we sort of were naturally drawn to this, because it made sense. You're working with a lot of different people. That's one thing I found that I really enjoy. I really hate the technology, but I love the people, you know. So the technology is just a way to bring together people to work on artistic projects, and
yeah,
it's been really wonderful. I don't know if there's something specific you want to hear about. I was brought into this by Mark Dresser right around the same time he was getting involved, around 2007. And we've just done a lot of different projects, some very large ones where we were the producers and organized everything.
Yeah.
Other projects where I just was a trombone player on someone else's project. But I've done enough of this now that it's very comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
It's not strange anymore. But each project is really different. Each space feels different depending on the physical space you're in. And the way you set it up, it's every concert has been very different. People often ask, "What's it like to do that work?" And I tell them it's different every time,
mm-hmm.
you know. But it's fascinating. I've been having a great time.
Yeah,
mm.
Maybe it is because it's so new. You know, that might be one reason that we don't have this long time experience, and we're still each time something new happens, and in
yeah,
the constellation of musicians. Well, there were two questions that were raised this afternoon. One was how different is it for you when you're playing from your studio with a group that is playing on a stage, from playing on a stage, being on a stage and playing on a stage as well? Because I felt a difference when we did the last concert, you know.
Did I not play very well?
No.
I wasn't really playing my best because there was no audience here. Is that what you mean, Matthias?
No,
I'm kidding. That's interesting. So you felt a difference?
No, I felt it. You know where I felt the difference? It was when we were talking. Of course, Mark was talking more. But it was like talking from your studio to an audience which you don't have in front of you.
Right.
It's different. It's like you must feel like a radio operator, you know, like
yeah, in a way, although
get it out there.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't, I'm not sure if it feels that different, but it feels different when you're done. I mean,
yep.
There's an interesting phenomenon where you're, or at least for me, I'm aware that there's an audience listening.
Yeah.
You know. So it's not that I feel somehow like something's wrong, but when it's over, that feels very different.
Yeah.
When you like, you just step off the camera and turn your computer off, and then you're in
yeah.
this room all alone by yourself. That's always a very weird moment, you know,
yeah.
when you just performed a concert. We're so conditioned. I mean, you know, we've been playing concerts for decades, and you just get physically conditioned to this experience of the concert where you finish performing and then there's people there to talk to, and it's a, you know,
exactly.
it's a social environment, and you just finish this concert and you're connecting with the people now. It's really different to finish a concert and then literally turn everybody off, and
yeah.
you're alone, and you walk out of your office and you're running into people that had no idea you were even performing to a concert in Zurich
yeah.
5 minutes ago. It just feels very, that's a little strange.
Yeah.
But while I'm playing, it actually doesn't feel that bad. Maybe it's a little different because I know that if I had to, I could just jump off camera and no one would even see me. I mean, there's you know, you're aware of that, but I'm
yeah.
not, when I'm in the music really feeling it, I'm not thinking about anything like that. So I'm actually very aware of the audience and the other performers, and you're kind of creating them in your mind. I mean, if you think about it, when you're on a stage and you look out, and if it's a well-lit stage and everybody's in the dark in the audience and you don't even see people, it's kind of like that. I mean, you know they're there. You can feel their presence.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not, it's not like you're looking at them. I don't really look at the audience while I play,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it's only afterward that I think it's a little
yeah.
strange.
When you decompress.
Yeah, it's just a little weird. I always call Mark. Like,
okay.
when we have things, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that, I'll call him up on the phone and say, how, you know, we'll talk about it right afterward, because
yeah, yeah.
it just feels like you need to talk to someone
yeah.
who was there to remind you that it wasn't a dream or something.
Well, that's why I felt it. I didn't feel it in the playing. Of course, I was busy myself, but I felt it when you were, you know, introducing each other and talking
right.
about the music and about the collaboration. I felt like it was not, you were just talking to us and not to your audience at the same time.
That's interesting, yeah.
I felt this much more, it sounded more official the time before. It sounded more private this time where we had you in your studio.
Yeah, you know, maybe that's because it feels kind of like a phone conversation or
yeah.
something.
Huh?
When you're talking through a microphone and you know there's people on the other end hearing you, you're not directing yourself towards a big audience of people in front of you, so you probably talk a little differently. I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah.
But I think, I mean, for me, one of the most interesting things about this work is the whole idea of presence. You know, we describe it as telematics, but the broader feel, the broader term is really telepresence, which is what we're experiencing right now. I mean, I'm present there with you, but I'm here, and you're present for me. But, you know, so there's this question of how you experience someone else's presence,
yeah.
And it's fascinating. I just can't get enough of this. But it, you know, because we are becoming really accustomed to experiencing people's presence through screens and through sound, when their actual physical bodies are so far away, and it's something that we're more and more used to, I think.
Yeah.
And this is going to be, it's just going to increase for the next generation. I mean, they're already, you know, kids today are just constantly online, and
mm-hmm.
and the sense of presence you get through Facebook and Twitter and social media is just different than anything that I grew up with. So it's a very different sense of community and presence, and I think we're going to find this more and more impacting the arts.
Well, I think you can find out a lot about this through playing with these medias, as we do with improvised music and composed music, that you get much more aware of this, you know, of this disembodied voices, you know, like you have that, you have this. You don't have the people here, but you play with them. That's really, that's crazy,
yeah.
You know. And when I remember the first concert we had last April, where I felt I was anticipating the music coming from the United States, that was for me the craziest experience of that night.
Yeah,
I was anticipating some of the flute lines of Nicole, you know,
right.
And when we had to play together, was like, I knew I had to play ahead of what I wanted to play. So it's kind of it's a weird feeling, and it's a huge effort in of your brain, you know. It's like, it's really,
yeah.
Really something like a double mind thing going on. I don't know, it's kind of schizophrenic. You have your reality, and then your head anticipates the music, and because you want to play on it, you know. It's
because
really
of the latency.
Yeah.
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 But
yeah.
It reminds me that we had in the rehearsal today no latency. No. It was so tight and close.
Right.
Probably it's a nice experiment when we can make a test with you with the get the latency.
He wants you to play.
That's
a friendly way to say, can we throw one out? Are you honest?
Sorry
okay.
for that.
No, it's all right. I got a trombone. Well, you know, you can always, if you wanted to play with latency, just as an experiment, you can always introduce some artificially between
the buffer
in your
size.
Connection there. We had in our class last year, some students actually did that. That for one piece, they wanted to increase the latency just to see what that to work with that.
Yep.
And they added a delay, you know, before they sent their audio out.
Yeah, of course. But
yeah,
also with
so
the buffer size, we made experiments or something.
Yeah, and it's something that I played with when I'm composing. Sometimes I'll set up in a DAW, you know, like Ableton Live, and I'll add a delay on one side. Just working with MIDI instruments to experiment with what it might feel like when we're doing a project. And if I have sounds coming from both sets of MIDI instruments to represent the two different ensembles, I'll experiment with adding a delay to see, well, what would it sound like if the Zurich, you know, drummer plays with the bass player here, what would it feel like to San Diego and that kind of thing. So that's been interesting.
But you have to decide for one location. I mean, you have to say, I want the result in San Diego, and then
right.
Then the drummer has to play ahead coming from
yeah.
Zurich.
Well, for example, if you, like on the piece that I did last year, I had this section in the middle where it was a kind of a groove and
yes.
rhythm, and the bass and piano players in San Diego were together. If the drummer in, say, Zurich plays with what he hears from the bass and piano,
yes.
it'll sound correct in Zurich,
yes.
you know, because he'll be
exactly.
lining up. But what I wanted to know was, what would it sound like to us in San Diego?
Yeah.
And so I calculated the delay that I thought we would have, and then I've set up these MIDI instruments to play the, you know, the like a fake version of the
yeah.
of the sounds, and then on the drums, I put a delay by
mm-hmm.
600 milliseconds or whatever it was, and so that I could turn the delay on and off. I could hear what it would sound like to him if I turn the delay off, and then if I turn it on, I can hear what it would sound like to us with him delayed. And it was interesting to play with this and sort of discover, like, it feels two different ways, but how can I get it to work so that it works, sounds
mm-hmm.
right
mm-hmm.
either way? That was the challenge, you know? It's kind of it's a weird, I don't know if it's composition, it's kind of geeky composition problem, but it was interesting to sort of come up with something that worked in both spaces. The idea was it would sound different, but
yeah.
it would kind of sound good in both spaces. That was the hope.
Well,
so.
What we did today, because Joe was asking, we have the piece we played, actually the composition of Jerry, which
cool.
we have the Zurich recording, which we watched with the Zurich film, and then we were listening to your edited video of the documentary of the whole thing. And listen back to the beginning of the piece, and it sounded completely different, you know.
Oh, really?
So it was the same information, but of course it was the way it was put together. The delays were on a different, you know. Of course, the delays were between. You remember I had to play that pulse of 100 on the flute, and Jerry was playing on me, and we were listening to your documentation video, and the piece sounded different, you know?
Right, because...
Yeah, and that was a very interesting connection to it. Of course, the mix was different as well, but you could tell rhythmically there was some different places where it locked in.
Well, I mean, that's kind of an interesting possibility to work with, is that you could have music that would be performed live together,
mm-hmm.
but it would really be two different pieces if you think
yep.
about it. It's two...
Yeah.
It's two variations on the same piece, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that was kind of the idea of my piece, actually.
Yeah.
And then I did the same piece for all three concerts on that tour. We had another concert with New York and one with Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And I did different orchestrations of the same piece, but they sounded different in each, not only in each site,
mm-hmm.
but across all three concerts. So, but it was, I was trying to figure out how to do like a it's a different kind of variation form.
Yeah, yeah.
In a way. So 21st century variations, I guess. Not variations on a theme, but on a place.
I think maybe that, there was one other question coming up, you know, because it was the question about when you improvise or when you play a piece, I mean, you actually should create a new music that is taking advantage of being played through the internet, you know. If you play
right.
a music that sounds better, let's say, more precise, if you play that music without the internet, that will be the performance you want to hear. But how does a music sound? I mean, that's one of the questions we have as composers.
Yeah.
Perform through the internet so that we forget about technical aspects, you know?
Right, but we have to remember the space, right? And this is the really interesting thing for us, is to compose for that telematic stage, we call it, or the space that we're in telematically. There's a lot of people working on this technology right now who are trying to make it as transparent as possible. In other words, they want to use it just to do what they already do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. That's fine. I mean, if you want to play like, you know, big band music or orchestra music or whatever through the internet, go for it. That's wonderful. But in the circles, the networks of people that I'm in, we're really interested in trying to approach this as a new kind of medium. It's like a new space.
Yeah.
You know, and I think about it, I mean, I think historically there's nothing unusual about this. People have always composed music for different spaces. It's like all the cathedrals in Europe, you know. There were certain kinds of music that evolved alongside those architectural spaces that exploited the resonances. You know, you go back to Giovanni Gabrielli,
mm-hmm.
talking about brass players, right? The antiphonal music, and I mean, there's all these kinds of music that arose because of spaces that were new, that were being created.
Yes.
And I think this is the same thing. You're going to find new kinds of music rising up to meet what the specifics of this space. So for me, there's a whole bunch of different aspects of the telematic space that are really interesting. One is the latency that we already talked about a little bit. How do you work with that? But the other is the fact that we're close miking everything. You know, I mean, you really hear a kind of detail from people when you get it right,
mm-hmm.
that is more like a recording studio
mm-hmm.
than a normal live performance. This is something that Mark and I have talked about a lot. There's a kind of intimacy in the recording studio because you're dealing with very close mic situations,
mm-hmm.
and you can hear a lot of grain and detail in people's sound. So you can also do a lot with the softer dynamic range because of that. That is sometimes hard to do in a live performance.
Yep.
So to be able to exploit that full range of dynamic is really interesting, and to kind of explore this, it's almost like a, in terms of the way it feels, it's a kind of a hybrid space between a recording studio and a live performance. So that's interesting. And then the other thing that I think about a lot is the kind of multiplicity of the space. You know, the fact that it's not just one space. It's a shared space between different sites, but it feels different to everybody. You know, when I'm in my office here, I'm in this space, and you're in that space, and yet we're in a shared space right now too that we've created sort of psychologically. So there's a multiplicity going on. We're experiencing ourselves in different spaces simultaneously, and I think that has a corollary or a parallel in music and sound. So some of the musical compositional techniques I've wanted to explore have to do with creating multiplicity. And this is something that we already explore even in our live performances. You know, you might have different layers or different sound worlds that are coexisting but different at the same time. This is, I think it works really well telematically to do this. You can explore that, and you can set up, you can work with the spaces so that maybe you have people in one location doing one thing and people in another location playing a different kind of music, or you can create connections across the spaces so that you have people in different spaces creating a musical space together and then another one. There's so many fascinating possibilities that to work with that to me those are some of the things that are unique to this medium, or that maybe aren't unique to the medium, but it tends to heighten it, you know.
Yeah.
So the same way that, like, in a club with gigantic speakers and subwoofers, you know, where they're playing like dance music or hip hop or something with like really low frequencies, it makes a big difference for some of that music if you have the speakers to really produce those low frequencies that are just so powerful, you know. It's just not the same to listen to on a little pair of earbuds on your phone or whatever, right? It just doesn't. It's a music that has a physical experience attached to it that's about the space and the equipment that you're using to experience it. And so I think a lot of kinds of music are like this. They depend on a certain, their aesthetic is tied in very closely to a certain set of physical parameters in the context where people normally experience it. So that's one of the things we're trying to learn about this telematic space. What are the dimensions and the qualities of this telematic space that we want to explore? And every time we do a concert, we learn more about that. So,
yeah.
Or a class.
I think this is why I
look forward to hearing what you guys are doing. I mean, it's
no, but you've been touching now. Well, one of our students has to leave.
Okay.
And right now, the others will stay.
Hi.
You know, we had the same discussions about actually some of the, you know, we play duos across the spaces, and we play trios with two people in the same space, having one person away. We looked at some of the compositions we had in our performances before, where you know, we switched from Zurich to San Diego, and we had a group in San Diego playing alone, and then we had one musician from Zurich playing with San Diego, and all this stuff. So it's kind of virtuosity of rooms, which you don't get in a live performance usually. That's what you say with the multiplicity
right.
of rooms. And you get this on such a virtuoso level at the end. And that's one of the fascinating parameters, I guess.
Yeah.
That we were also exploring today. And of course, the other thing that always new rooms had, created new music. I mean, you have.
Yeah.
That has been along the history, and it's great that we get another new room.
Yeah, and also together with other mediums, like together with dancers or actors.
Yeah, I mean, this will be another thing, you know, with actors, and get combinations which you will never ever get in one room together, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the dancing whale and,
fish ballet
and a monastery of sisters playing trombones.
Right. I want to go there. Well, that's another aspect of telematics that we have not really explored in my networks of collaborators, but that I think is really interesting is the whole political dimension to space. Meaning, for example, if you were to do a telematic concert, say with people in a prison,
mm-hmm.
or connecting with people in a society where they don't have the ability to leave very easily their country, you know, where there's some kind of you're using the internet to connect, or with people who might be limited somehow. In mobility, it can be very interesting. I had a student in our class last year when we did this graduate seminar, and we had them invent projects, just hypothetical projects that they'd like to do. And his idea was to do a collaboration with a dancer who he knows who is in Taiwan, but can't leave the country, can't come to the United States, even though she studied here, but she doesn't have a visa. But she wants to maintain connections with people here, but she can't leave Taiwan for some reason. And so his thought was he could do a piece where they were telematically connected,
mm-hmm.
and she was physically almost in his space using motion sensor technology and things like that, as a kind of metaphorical way to bring her here and connect her with people here. And it was really interesting to think about, it's a new kind of mobility. It's a new kind of travel. It's a new kind of connectivity that can sometimes clash with the social structures we have in place. And that opens up a lot of possibilities for using music in political ways that could be really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Or even just could color the situation when you're dealing with very different cultures or very different, even time. I mean, right now, right there, it's, you guys are like getting ready for dinner, right? And I just woke up. So it's a really different space. And to think about, how does that feel when people are working together in such different spaces, culturally, temporally? So I think there's a lot of possibilities beyond just the musical parameters. We've been looking in my circles a little more closely at traditional musical, compositional, and performative parameters, but we haven't been like going to prisons or anything and trying to hook up connections with people. But that could be really interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be fascinating. Particularly for education. I think if it's like
Absolutely.
Someone there was studying education, I think this is going to be a huge aspect of education in the 21st century. It already is, but it's quickly fallen under the control of corporations who want to use it in terrible ways. But we really need to take control over these technologies and use them in positive ways, not just for people to make money off of.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you for
that. I wonder if you if you would like, well, the harp is left now. If you want to take, would you be in for a duo?
Sure.
With cello over there, or
yeah,
we could actually add the we could add the flute as well. That was
sure, whatever you
there.
Like. Is the sound okay? I hear myself coming back. Is there a lot of bleed?
You don't like yourself coming back?
I mean, I don't mind it, but do you want me to put on headphones? Is it a problem?
No, but we probably turned down the monitor a little bit. Actually, could
it's not a problem for me.
Oh,
but
I can imagine.
You're not hearing yourself come back, right?
We have a little.
It's better?
How is it now?
Test. Yeah, it's fine. I don't mind it. I was just asking for you.
Okay.
You're not hearing your own sound come back, right?
Yeah.
Well, we will hear.
So
andere Position, hast du schon zusammen?
Ja, mit dem Spock. Oder mit Cello.
Oder
mit
Sklich.
John, willst du Cello spielen?
Du?
Soll
ich
spielen? Hat jemand eine Koloform?
Ich mache nur den Klapptest, um das Delay, also ich finde das spannend.
Ja, this is interesting, Michael. Before you play, how do you... the delay?
Well, you can do different things. I mean, you can use a pain test to measure the actual network delay, but you know what we do is very not scientific. When you want to measure the how it actually feels, it's a little different because pain is just a network tool that will tell you the latencies between the IP addresses, but if you want to feel the delay, like what does it actually feel like? We do the counting, you know, the counting thing where we just go 1, 2, 3, 4, and then just join me. You know what
okay,
I mean?
let's try this one.
Okay,
you
so
start.
I'll start.
Yeah.
Or actually, you start, and you'll hear it better. So
okay,
go ahead.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10.
So you hear it like, then you notice, if you hear it like, actually if you count at about the metronome mark of 60, 1 second, then you can kind of calculate using your musical skills, right? If you hear it like 1, 1, 2, 2, 3, 3, that's about like 1, 2, 3, 4, bop, bop, bop. But if it feels like a 16th note delay, that's about a quarter of a second.
Yes.
250 milliseconds.
Yes.
We just do a rough thing like that.
Yeah, well, we
because
did the
that
same
gives you
thing.
An idea what it actually feels like, as opposed to if you do
first.
A ping test, it'll tell you 80 milliseconds, but that doesn't take into account the sound getting into the system and coming out the speaker and everything.
Well, we were measuring with metronome, you know.
Oh, suddenly I can't hear you very well.
Oh. We were measuring with metronome.
Yeah?
Like putting on the metronome at let's say tempo 62 or 66, and then of course we have the back kind of the backbeat, you know,
right.
Coming, and then you can really lock it in exactly, and you have a metronome, and from there you calculate the time.
Yeah,
I mean that works. We were actually asking today, also if when we write the score. You should actually be playing from a different score from what we have. I mean, your score should be 1/16 note delayed. You know what I mean?
Right, well, Jerry did some of that.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to calculate so exactly that it works out. And also, you can only have it in one place, right?
Of course.
I mean, you can't have it both ways, as we say.
No.
There's no way to get it to sound exactly right in both places. But what Jerry did on his piece, and also I did some of this, was write music that it kind of works both ways, because as long as it's falling into the same general subdivision, it doesn't matter if you're exactly on the beat, as long as it's the same speed, it kind of sounds okay. So. There are ways to handle it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you wouldn't want to play, like, you know, a Mozart quartet or something.
No. I mean,
you feel right.
You don't need to play that stuff also.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when they started playing Bach, when the DX7 boss came out.
Oh, no.
Okay, so let's go and play some Dunim Skadoof.
Yeah.
Okay, so you see it. Cool. Okay.
Flute and cello, is that what you're
saying?
That's
flute and cello,
yep.
And a harp on tatzit. I won't sit down on that. It's actually a trio in Zurich with tatzit harp.
Okay.
So the microphone is open.
Okay, let's go.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
fantastic, Michael. That's beautiful.
Thank you very much. You guys are like, okay, so you got some real players there. It's not like a technology class.
No.
People don't really play.
Beautiful. Thanks.
Yeah,
well,
we didn't really sound check before. I mean, you only have me to worry about, so you could turn me up and down as you wish.
Yeah.
I realized halfway through that it would have been nice to get levels, because I probably would have asked for more cello, a little bit more cello in the mix.
Yeah.
Since I'm not, I don't think I can mix you here, or maybe
okay.
I can, but I just didn't know what channel.
I can give you more cello,
but
we should have found this.
You know, it's one of those really important things, or sound checking, to do. And it was really close, though. It was really good. It wasn't a problem, but there were a few moments when the cello was a little soft in relation to the flute, and I would have turned up the cello if I knew what channel.
Yeah, well, I was misled, because we did a careful sound check with the room downstairs, you know,
right,
with the two rooms, and somehow I felt like, oh, the sound check is done. You know,
but it was overall really good. Nice sound. Yeah, great.
Anyway, are there some questions from your side, or?
I wonder how many concerts, how many telematic concerts do you do in a year?
Well, I should look it up. I don't know. Probably. We've been trying to do. Once a year, on average, I've been part of a really big one where I'm like the director, one of the composers, and it's a huge production. And then, but there are other concerts during the year, maybe two or three, some years maybe more, some years maybe four or five, or more. But most years maybe two, three, four concerts at most. Where I'm just a player, and those are easier if I just show up and, you know, or do it like we did one last month where I was just here in my office, and that was easy, because I don't have to worry about setting up a space and directing people and, you know. So I would say maybe right now only 2, 3, 4, 5 per year, and one of those is usually a very time-consuming large project, and the others are easier ones where I just sort of dial in and you know, do it from an office or something. But the big ones take a lot of time. When we're dealing with lights, video, scene, you know, scenery, or not really scenery, but how to set up a stage, and so those take a lot of planning. So right now, only about one of those per year, because it just is so difficult.
Yeah.
But more and more, I find I'm doing more. You know, each year I do a few more. I think it's gonna. I can see 10 years from now doing a lot.
Well, actually, what we are always talking about with Johannes is to have one room of the university set up as a telematic room. You know?
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do here too. We
everything
have a
is
space,
set.
And
yeah.
I think that'll be a good model to have in the future, or to have a space where it's for regular concerts too, but you have all the technology for the telematics just in place to go. So you don't have to set it up from scratch every time, because that's really time consuming, is getting all the computers in there, you know, everything. But the more we do this, the better we get at making it efficient.
Other questions? Yeah?
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. When you're doing this telematic concerts, do you like what is your goal, your main goal? Do you want to just try which music you can play telematically, or do you want to bring people to classical concerts because you mix music and the internet, or what is your idea?
That's a good question. I don't really think of it as any different than my goal is the same as with any kind of music I make, even in non-telematic concerts. It's just to make music and connect with people. So that's what I'm doing when I'm in a normal concert too. I want to feel connected to the people that I'm performing with, and then extend that to the audience, so that for me music is always a very social experience, partly because I play trombone, so there's no solo trombone. I grew up like playing in ensembles and things like that, and so music for me is very much about connections with people, feeling the connection with the people that you're playing with, and bringing the audience into that through their listening. So that's all I'm trying to do with the telematics too. It just allows us to connect with people who are far away, and so that can be very rewarding. Like I've played with Matthias telematically. I don't think we've ever played in person.
No, but I was just up before. It would just be so great to be on tour once.
It would be fun to play in person, right?
And play in person and talk about
it. But I feel like we've played together quite a bit now telematically.
I
feel like I kind of know you as a collaborator, but we've never actually played. Actually, we did play in person once, but not. It was at your house. It wasn't for an audience. When I was there in one time visiting with Mark. But we've never really.
With Mark,
yeah,
we were on tour.
I came by one day and we improvised in your home.
Oh,
that
man.
Was years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my former life. Yeah.
But it just extends the connection. So in the goal is really the same. It just allows for more. It just allows you to extend the goal that I already have with music. So that's why I was saying before that I think for improvisers and people who think about music in a very social way, this is a natural medium to embrace. Other people seem a little bit nervous about it, because if your goal, as say some classical performers and composers that I talk with, are much more focused on the aesthetic goal of creating a piece that sounds exactly like this each time, and if that's your goal, then there's too many unknowns in this environment, and it's not worth it.
Yeah.
But our goal is very much a social one with music as improvisers. Yeah. So for me, it's really not that different. I don't know if that answers your question.
but that's
the best I can do.
No, but that's interesting. Then it emphasizes something that, it emphasizes what's actually sometimes lacks classical music, that we have this work which is opened on page one, and we play through it, and it finishes on the last page, and everything, all the rest is around this work. We put this in the center, that might be one of the most important differences between improvised music and
although it's also true that classical music is also very social, right? I mean,
before and after, yes.
It's not that, but that whole idea of the work is a mental construct that is very powerful.
Yeah.
And so people start to think that music is about this sonic object that we're creating and sitting there and looking at, whereas really, for me, music is about the social connections that you're building with people, the kind of communication, the interactivity between people. Mm. And I think that's actually what is going on in classical music too. It's just they don't like to think about it that way as much. Mm. So, and these are broad generalizations. I don't want to really stereotype, but coming out of the world of improvised music and jazz and, there's a strong social set of aesthetic values that it's very much at the foreground of what's happening and how people talk about the music, how they think about it. So, so I'm drawn to this medium for those reasons.
Oh, beautiful. Well, you're there.
Yeah, I have
another
question.
Another question.
Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Sure.
How expensive is a one of those really big concerts where you have three different countries? How expensive is that?
Yeah, that's a good question, because you really got to think about these logistics, right? What is expensive is not, for us anyway, it's not the equipment, because we already have everything, we're at universities where they have microphones, speakers, lights, audio interfaces, computers, all that stuff we've got sitting around, and so we're using equipment that is already there. If you had to go out and buy it would be expensive. You need good computers, good audio interfaces and microphones and all that. But if you're working in a place where they have all that gear, then that's not really the expense. The expense is the people, that you have to pay people to help you out, because you can't do everything yourself. So you need, you know, like if you're trying to be in a rehearsal, you need someone to monitor the network connections and to sit there and fiddle with soft phone while you're trying to rehearse and things like that. So we hire graduate students often to do work for us.
Okay.
And then there are other expenses like if you want to film it and record it to get good documentation,
yeah, sure.
That costs money. So I would say, it just depends on what you're trying to do, but several thousand dollars at least for, I mean, if you're gonna, it depends on how much rehearsal you want, but if you're gonna try and rehearse several times between the sites and then have a concert and you have to hire people to run tech for you to do the technological side, it can cost anywhere from $10,000 up to 20 or 30, but this is all, you know, it's money that we don't really have to pay exactly, because these graduate students, we try and write grants. This is the way it works here anyway. We write grants so that the school will give us money to pay our students to do the technology for us and things like that. And the students
That's
like it because they make money. And the university likes it because we're hiring students, but we have to write grants to get the money. So it really varies a lot. But I think the main expense is labor, people.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to take it really from scratch, you would actually have to get together with the people on the other location. So I would have to fly over, discuss the whole project with you.
Right.
We would have to agree on the equipment. We would have to agree on the aesthetics, you know, what
right.
we want to do, what you want to do. I mean, at that point, I was asked, actually, after our last concert, a guy who does cultural, he does cultural events, and he asked me how much is it to do that kind of event, if I would like to connect Hong Kong with London and Zurich, you know, and I told him it's $100,000.
Yeah, I would probably quote a pretty high price.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, if you want to do it, you want to do it right, and I would
really
want
to do it at a very high level.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would need a lot of people. You need a lot of testing.
Yeah.
Time, you know.
You have to rent an open direct.
I mean, one of the problems is that we don't typically get paid for our own work. You know, Mark and I are always complaining about this, but like. We spent, for the virtual tour concerts last year, I mean, we spent hundreds and hundreds of hours doing testing for technology communications, talking to people to get consultations about what tools to use, and then organizing and rehearsing. I mean, if we had been charging for our time, we would have asked for $20,000 each just for that alone.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it really depends what if you want artist fees, like right now, we're working on the next big concert, which would be about a year from now. We're trying to get a big grant so that we can pay composers and performers who are participating. This is one thing that's been missing a lot of the time. We haven't had a budget for paying the artists.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to get, we're trying to get a $50,000 grant, or $35,000. A lot of that is going to go towards paying composers and performers, and then some of it will go towards paying technology people. I don't know if we're going to get it, but we're hoping we get it. If not, I don't know how we're going to do it. But, yeah, I mean, if you really wanted to do it from scratch and pay everybody a professional fee, you probably would need, you know, $60,000 to $100,000 to do one of these big events. But we're used to doing it where everybody's kind of doing it more to get the credit, you know, in the university system, you get a certain kind of, if you do stuff like this, you can get promoted, and so people do it for reasons that aren't just economic.
Yeah.
So Mark and I have done a lot of these works where we haven't gotten paid anything. but we also really are interested in using, I'm very interested in using software that is open source and free. I think that's really important. There are some platforms that are proprietary software platforms that are very expensive. And some of them are pretty good, but they cost a lot of money. and I'm not interested in that. So that's why we like Jack Trip. It's free. Softphone isn't free, but it's kind of cheap.
Mm-hmm.
The company that makes Softphone, Life Size, they do video conferencing for corporate people, and they have like these $20,000 beautiful systems that are really nice, that are much better than what we're using right now. But this is the cheap version. This is like the $200 version.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all about what you can pay for. In the corporate world, they're used to spending a lot more money on these things. But but we'd like to find open source solutions. I think that's really how it's going to have a future.
Mm.
So.
All right.
This is also a research project.
We want to turn it into a research project here. Would also give it some money, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, Michael, I think that's all from our side.
Okay.
It's beautiful. I mean, it's really great to connect with and to get some of your experience here. And I think here were some issues. You opened some fields that we will have a lot of space.
Well, let's teach a class sometime. It'd be fun to have a class. I don't know how the schedule would work out because you guys were so late there.
Each Wednesday at that time.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mark and I are doing one in the fall. So
yeah.
If you have any workshops in the fall, we're doing another seminar in the fall.
Which week is this? September?
The fall, it would be October.
Perfect.
In November, and then finishing in early December. So about.
Well, let's talk about this because we want to put up an event end of October when we are at the new campus.
Oh,
and
really?
It would be great to have some students connect.
With ICST, the institute?
Yes, and we are all in a new campus, and I want to come up with some telematic projects, and one of them could be that we connect our students.
Yeah.
And then you would be the guy who does Jack Trip, I do the camera, Mark does the light, and then play. Because then we get paid, you know.
That's right.
We get paid and don't play.
Yeah.
And what do we get?
Yes.
You get a sandwich. Yeah.
A slice of pizza.
Yeah.
Oh my
gosh. Try and get everybody.
Okay. Michael, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And
thank
all
you.
The rest.
Great to meet you all. Let's stay in touch.
We do bye bye.
Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
Yes, we get them all.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Please stay in touch. Just
yeah.
You know, send an email if anything.
We will.